Hey, this is Dylan Short, host of Locked On Braves, and you're listening to Locked On Yankees.
Welcome to the Locked On Yankees podcast, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Stacey Gotsoulias, and I'm the host of Locked On Yankees. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Yankees, all one word. You can find me on Twitter at Stace Gots. Please feel free to tweet questions or comments to either account. If you're a new listener, hello and welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. I hope you all enjoyed today's episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your first order. We are continuing our Time Machine series. Last episode, we visited a not-so-pleasant season 30 years ago, 1990. Today, thankfully, we're going back 20 years to the year 2000, which ended a lot better than 1990. But first, you can get Locked On Yankees and all other Locked On podcasts straight to your phone in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Yankees. So as I said, the 2000 Yankees were definitely a lot better than the 90 Yankees, but they weren't that great. They were actually lucky that the rest of the AL East was not good because they only finished 87 and 74. And not only that, they finished the season 2-13 and ended the season on a 7-game losing streak, so they backed into the playoffs. There's no hyperbole, they backed into the playoffs. September of 2000 was horrendous. So when they did make the playoffs and they actually won the division, at that point I thought to myself, well, okay, they made the playoffs again, that's great, after winning back-to-back championships. I did not envision this team winning a World Series, so when they did, I was shocked. But let's rewind, because we can't just go straight into the World Series. There's other stuff to talk about in the year 2000. I'm going to discuss two specific games that happened back-to-back, one because I attended both of them, and two, just because of the difference between the two games and the things that happened during the two games. So, first up, we're going back to May 28th, 2000. So this game will be 20 years old tomorrow night. It was a Sunday night game at the old stadium, Yankees-Red Sox, 8:05 start, and it was Pedro Martinez against Roger Clemens. As soon as I said the pitching matchup, everyone who was around in 2000 knows exactly what game I'm talking about. So let's get into the lineups. For the Red Sox, Jeff Fry, Trot Nixon, Brian Daubach, Nomar Garciaparra, Carl Everett, Mike Stanley, Troy O'Leary, John Valentin, Jason Varitek, and obviously Pedro is your starter. For the Yankees, Chuck Knobloch, Derek Jeter, Paul O'Neill, Bernie Williams, Jorge Posada, Tino Martinez, Shane Spencer, Ricky Ledeay, Scott Brosius, Clemens is your starter. Both pitchers pitched a complete game. The game was tied 0-0 until the top of the ninth. And let me tell you, being at a game like this, where it's 0-0, where one swing of the bat can change everything, is stressful, even in May. Because you have it embedded in your brain that the Red Sox are the Yankees' biggest rival, and you want to beat them all the time. So when you're at this kind of game, it feels like a playoff game. So the top of the ninth, Clemens gets two outs rather quickly on five pitches. John Valentin sees four pitches. He hits into a ground out. Jason Varitek hits the first pitch as a bunt ground out. So there's two outs. Then Jeff Fry hits a single. Okay, no big deal. Then on the fourth pitch that Trot Nixon sees from Roger Clemens, he hits a fly ball to deep right field. I can picture it in my mind. I sat above the first base, above the dugout, in the fifth row of the upper deck. I can remember the trajectory I can remember groaning as soon as he hit it because you knew it was a home run. It was so frustrating that if there weren't people sitting in front of me, I would have punched something. And just, you feel so deflated when something like that happens because you're seeing such a good game. And Clemens pitched a great game. It was just that one bad pitch. And he got Daubach out on a ground out, so it was 2-0. Then the Yankees get things going a little bit. Knobloch is hit by a pitch, obviously, because Pedro loved hitting Knobloch and Jeter. if you were around back then, you remember. Derek Jeter hit a single. Knobloch made it to second. Paul O'Neill struck out swinging. Bernie Williams hit a fly ball to deep right that advanced Knobloch to third. While Posada was up, Jeter stole second, and Posada was hit by a pitch because Pedro Martinez liked hitting him too. But no, I don't think he wanted to hit anyone in this situation. And then Tino Martinez hit a ground out to end the game, and the Red Sox won 2-0. So that was a big bummer, but it was the night before Memorial Day, so Stacy didn't go home. Oh no, why would she do that? She went out to her local bar, where she hung out all the time, because she was only 25 at this point, and could go out every night and feel okay. She stayed out till 4 in the morning, then had to wake up at about 10:30, because she had another game to attend. That's right. In those early years, when I had my season ticket package, I had the Sunday plan. The Sunday plan included opening day, Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Old Timers Day. It was fantastic. And the first year I had tickets, in 1999, each ticket was $23. My last year at the old stadium in 08, my tickets were $60 each. So, yeah. So the next day, the Yankees are playing the Oakland A's. Andy Pettitte is your starter for the Yankees. Omar Alvarez is the starter for Oakland. Now, I'm really hungover, so I'm already just not feeling great. Then we park at Woodlawn, because that's what we did. We didn't park in the parking garage near the stadium. It was too expensive. So we'd park our car on the street and then take the 4 train down to the stadium. I nearly puke on the train from the motion of the train. I get to the stadium. I smell hot dogs. I almost puke. It was just a hellish experience. And I was just, I had to be at every game that I had tickets for, no matter how horrible I felt. But that was a mistake. Plus, my seats were in the sun. It was just, it was a mess. I was a mess. The one saving grace was that it wasn't very hot that day. It was only in the mid-60s. So it wasn't like I was sitting there hungover, sweating out my alcohol intake from the night before during a 90 degree day. You know what probably could have helped 25-year-old Stacy? Built Bar. Just think, I could have eaten a Built Bar before I got on the train. I probably wouldn't have felt as sick. I would have felt like I had something in my system that was good for me. Plus, who doesn't like bars that are covered in chocolate? Built Bar comes in 16 flavors. I've told you guys many times what my favorites are, but I'm going to do it again because I want you guys to try them. Mint Brownie Delight is so good. Salted Caramel, also good. Coconut Almond, fantastic. Raspberry Chocolate Cream is really good. Even the Orange Chocolate Cream. I'm not much of an orange and chocolate fan. I don't gravitate toward them, but I tried it out. And if you like orange and chocolate together, get that. The peanut butter brownie is good. Honestly, with 16 flavors, you will find at least 3 or 4 that you love. Luckily for you, Built Bar is having a deal this week. On top of the $10 that you get off your first order when you use the code LOCKEDON, you can also get $5 off every bar that you order between May 25th and May 31st. And they have 4 new flavors. Peanut butter banana, pineapple upside down cake, coconut pecan pie, and blueberry lemon. Again, all the bars are covered in chocolate, so just imagine how good those flavors will be encased in chocolate. Use the code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order, and if you order this week, you get $5 off every box of bars. This podcast is sponsored by the audiobook edition of 24, Life Stories and Lessons from the Say Hey Kid. In this reflective and inspirational memoir, the legendary Billy Mays shares the inspirations and influences responsible for guiding him on and off the field. Widely regarded as the greatest all-around player in baseball history, the beloved Willie Mays offers people of all ages his lifetime of experience, meeting challenges with positivity, integrity, and triumph. This special audiobook production includes a foreword read by Bob Costas and a bonus conversation with Willie Mays and his co-author John Shea. Whether you miss seeing your favorite players on the field this season or are looking for the perfect Father's Day gift, 24 is the inspiring story of one of sports fans' favorite living legends. Buy the audiobook edition of 24 now, wherever audiobooks are sold. So it's Memorial Day 2000. Your girl is hungover, but she's at a Yankee game. So she's kind of happy, because who isn't happy at Yankee Stadium? Now, what's interesting about this game, as I said the night before, both Pedro and Clemens went all nine innings. And in this game, both pitchers went all nine innings. Unfortunately for Omar Alvarez, he gave up four runs and lost the game. Not nine innings. What am I talking about? But he pitched a complete game. He pitched all eight innings that the Yankees were up, because obviously they were winning when they were going into the ninth inning. Something else happened during that game. The bottom of the sixth, Paul O'Neill walks. Fine. Bernie Williams hits a triple that scores him, puts them up 2-0 at that point. Tino Martinez is hit by a pitch. Jorge Posada reaches on an E4. And then Shane Spencer hits a line drive to Randy Velarde. He completes an unassisted triple play. Now, I'm obviously a little out of it because I'm hungover. But I look at the guys behind me and I said, did that just happen? I'd never seen a triple play in person. I've heard about triple plays. And I'd certainly never seen an unassisted triple play. So that was pretty cool. And it's kind of funny because Randy Velarde, he was the one that got the one run in the game. The Yankees won 4-1. Pettit gave up a home run to Velarde in the top of the ninth. So Randy Velarde had a pretty good game in a losing effort. But yeah, I saw an unassisted triple play. So that kind of, but not really, softened the blow from the night before, because that's pretty cool. I saw Dwight Gooden's no-hitter in 96. I saw an unassisted triple play in 2000. So as I said, the Yankees did not finish the season well at all. They were 2-13 in their final 15 games. They had a six-game losing streak, then they won two games against Detroit, and then they finished the season on a seven-game losing streak to finish 87-74. Again, they're lucky the rest of the AL East wasn't doing well. So who do they meet in the division series? The Oakland A's, of course, because it always seemed like they met the Oakland A's in the early 2000s. Oakland took the first game in Oakland, 5-3. The Yankees won the second game, 4-0. Game 3 in Yankee Stadium, the Yankees won 4-2. I was at that game. I was at every first game, every first home game. Then the Athletics beat up on Roger Clemens and won 11-1 in game 4. So of course it had to be decided in 5 games in Oakland. Thank God the Yankees won 7-5 and moved on to the ALCS against the Seattle Mariners. They ended up winning that in 6 games. Now they lost that the first game. I was at the first game, so I was not a very happy camper. They won the second game, they won the third game, they won the fourth game, so they were up 3-1. Then they lost game 5, 6-2 in Seattle, and they won game 6 back at home in New York, 9-7. And let's talk about that one, because that was the infamous David Justice home run. That is my favorite Michael Kay call of all time. I've spoken many times on this podcast, no offense to Kay, but I find his calls, especially of late, just too rehearsed and inauthentic, where this call, you can hear how genuinely excited he is, and that's why I love it so much. Let's set the stage. It's the bottom of the seventh. The Yankees are down 4-3. Jose Vizcaino hits a single. Chuck Knobloch hits a sacrifice that advances Vizcaino to second. Derek Jeter hits a single that advances Vizcaino to third. Then Arthur Rhodes comes in, And on the fifth pitch he throws to David Justice, this happens.
And the 3-1. Swung on a drill deep to right field. There it goes. See ya. Into the upper deck. David Justice with a 3-run home run. And the Yankees have come all the way back. They lead 6-4. Get your tokens ready. You might be boarding the subway. Oh, what a big home run for David Justice.
Obviously, the score didn't remain 6-4, and it didn't remain 6-4 in that inning because following Justice's home run, Bernie Williams hit a single, Tino Martinez hit a ground rule double, then they intentionally walked Jorge Posada to load the bases, Paul O'Neill hit a single that scored Bernie Williams and Tino Martinez, Posada made it to second. Jose Mesa came in to replace Arthur Rhodes, he walked Luis Soho, Vizcaino came up, back up, because he led off the inning, and hit a sacrifice fly that scored Posada. Then after Chuck Knobloch walked, Derek Jeter struck out looking. They scored 6 runs on 6 hits. They left 3 on base. It was 9-4 at this time. Now, the Mariners, being the pains in the ass that they were, scored 3 runs in the top of the 8th to make things sweaty. A-Rod led the inning off with a home run. Then Edgar Martinez walked. Mo came in to replace El Duque, who had started the game. John Olerud hit a double. Raul Ibanez hit a fly ball. Carlos Guillen hit a ground ball. And then Mark McLemore hit a double that scored Edgar and John Olerud. Jay Buhner came in to pinch hit for Dan Wilson. Mo struck him out swinging. They scored 3 runs on 3 hits. They left a runner on base, 9-7. The top of the 9th, Mo is still in the game. He gets Stan Javier to ground out. Wow, Stan Javier. I love flashbacks like this. Oh, by the way, Clay Bellinger replaced David Justice in left field for defensive purposes, I guess. Mike Cameron hit a fly ball. A-Rod hit a single. While Edgar Martinez was up, Rodriguez made it to second on defensive indifference. And then Edgar Martinez hit a ground ball to short to end the game and the series. The Yankees win 9-7. And they're heading to the Subway Series, where people were expecting them to be beaten handily by the Mets, if I recall correctly. Sports Illustrated predicted that the Mets would win the series in 5. But the joke was on Sports Illustrated. So as I told you earlier in the show, I had tickets to all the Game 1s at the stadium. So I was at Game 1 of the 2000 World Series. It was my first ever World Series game. I was very excited. I told you all the story about 1999. I'll briefly tell it now. My first year with season tickets, I had tickets to every game after the Yankees clinched. They swept in the division series. I had Game 4. They won the ALCS in 5. I had tickets for Game 6. They swept the World Series. I had tickets for Game 5. So I was very excited to finally be at a World Series game, and it was a very good introduction into World Series play for your girl. Let's quickly go through the lineups and the starters, and, you know, as you all recall, this was an extra inning game. So for the Mets, Timo Perez, Edgardo Alfonso, Mike Piazza, Todd Zeal, Robin Ventura, Benny Agbayani, Jay Payton, Todd Pratt, Mike Bordick. Al Leiter was your starter. For the Yankees, Chuck Knobloch, Derek Jeter, David Justice, Bernie Williams, Tino Martinez, Jorge Posada, Paul O'Neill, Scott Brosius, Jose Vizcaino. Your starter, Andy Pettitte. As I've mentioned many times, I've seen Andy Pettitte pitch so much that I want to try and go back and figure out exactly how many games I watched him pitch. It has to be 30, at least. There were years where I only saw Pettitte pitch in the playoffs. So, yeah, oh yeah. And then regular season, it always felt like he was pitching on Sundays. Obviously not that Sunday night game, Clemens and Pedro, but other Sundays in subsequent seasons, it was not that it was bad. I mean, you know, Andy Pettit's a great pitcher, or was a great pitcher. It's just hilarious that I saw him so many times. By the way, it was warm that night. At the start of the game, it was 68 degrees. I remember because I was wearing short sleeves and very comfortable. I will also tell you that my seats were so high in the upper deck that bugs were flying into the lights above our heads and dropping into our drinks. And because they don't give you covers for the drinks, because they're smart and don't want projectiles thrown onto the field, we had to cover our drinks with our hands. So that was fun. We had dead bugs falling into our drinks, into our hair, into our food. So the game was quiet until the sixth inning, the top of the sixth. Timo Perez hit a single. Alfonso hit a pop fly to second base. Then Piazza flied out to center. Then Todd Zeal infamously hits the double to left field that bounces off the top of the wall and back into the field. Timo Perez wasn't exactly motoring around the bases, and he got thrown out by Derek Jeter to end the inning. In the bottom of the sixth, Jose Vizcaino led off with a single. Knobloch hit a bunt ground out that forced the out on Vizcaino. Derek Jeter walked. Knobloch made it to second. David Justice hit a double that scored both Knobloch and Jeter, so they went up 2-0 at that point. The top of the seventh, things unraveled for Andy Pettitte. After getting Robin Ventura to hit a pop fly to second, he gave up back-to-back singles to Agbayani and Jay Payton. Then Todd Pratt walked to load the bases. Bubba Trammell pinch hit for Mike Bordick, hit a single that scored Agbayani and Payton to tie the game. Pratt made it to second. Timo Perez hit a bunt ground out that advanced Pratt to third, Trammell to second. Jeff Nelson came in to replace Pettitte. Not that he didn't really lose it, but, you know, he gave up the lead. Jeff Nelson gives up a single to Alfonso, puts the Mets up 3-2. Mike Piazza hits a fly ball to end the inning. Now, this is the inning that changed the game. The bottom of the ninth. Armando Benitez is pitching, or he comes in to replace Franco. Jorge Posada hits a fly ball out to center field. Well, deep right center. Then Paul O'Neill comes up. He works a walk after 10 pitches. That was quite an at-bat to witness in person. And, you know, the Yankees are down 3-2. You don't want to lose to the Mets. So it was very stressful. But as stressful as it was, you felt as if the game was shifting into the Yankees' favor after that walk. Luis Polonia comes in to pinch hit for Scott Brosius. He hits a single, advances O'Neill to second. Vizcaino hits a single, advances O'Neill to third, Polonia to second. Then Chuck Knobloch hits a sacrifice fly deep to left. O'Neill scores. Game is tied 3-3. Derek Jeter strikes out, swinging to end the inning. So the game goes through the 10th, sort of quietly, the 11th, the top of the 12th. Mike Stanton has a 1-2-3 inning. And then the bottom of the 12th against Turk Wendell. Wendell came in the bottom of the 11th to replace Glendon Rush. So Bernie Williams hits a ground out to second. Tino Martinez hits a single to right field. Jorge Posada hits a double to center field that advances Tino to third. Paul O'Neill is intentionally walked. Luis Soho hits a pop fly to the catcher. I remember being so annoyed at that. And then Jose Vizcaino, first pitch he sees from Wendell, hits a single to left. Tino scores. Yankees win on the walk-off 4-3. It's my first World Series game. It's very exciting to witness. Even better, it's a Saturday night, so me and my friends go to our local bar when we get home. We party all night, celebrating the win. Our friend Matt, who's a diehard Mets fan, is not very happy, but we are. And then the rest of the series is really close, although Game 2 wasn't close until the Mets made it sweaty and made it 6-5. Then the Mets won the first game in Shea 4-2. That was the El Duque game. Game 4 is the infamous Derek Jeter leads off with a home run game. They win that game 3-2. And then Game 5, which was another favorite game of mine, didn't get to go to. But it's funny how your memory works because in my mind, the Luis Soho hit bounced about 38 times, but it really only bounced 3 times. The Yankees win the World Series in 5 games. Maybe Sports Illustrated printed a mistake and they meant that the Yankees were going to win in 5 games and not the Mets. But anyway, they win their third World Series in a row after an 18-year drought. the Yankees seem unstoppable. Obviously, they were stoppable the next year, but they made it to the bottom of the ninth inning of a seventh game of the World Series. We all realized it was special while we were watching it, but now that we're 20 years, or more than 20 years removed from the beginning of the dynasty, what the Yankees did in the late 90s, early 2000s was unbelievable. And it won't be replicated. I really don't think it will be by anyone, not even the Yankees at this point. So I hope you enjoyed that trip back to 2000. It was definitely better than the trip back to 1990. And that's it for this episode of Locked On Yankees, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode was brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and save $10 off your first order by using the promo code LOCKEDON. I'd like to remind you that you can subscribe to this show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Fantasy Baseball. One more thing, if you could be so kind, please rate the podcast and spread the word about this podcast to your fellow Yankee fans. We would really appreciate it. Enjoy your Wednesday, and next time we will be taking a trip back to 2005.